This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
She's a big girl, and though her teeth are fairly good, she's not the type I ever would be eager to engage. No more buts, Mrs. Worthington. Nuts, Mrs. Worthington. Don't put your daughter on the stage.
Well, that was Noel Coward and Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage, Mrs. Worthington. But we have got somebody here who ignored that advice. It's Jenny Linden, and we're really excited to have you in the studio with us, Jenny. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me, James.
No, it's a great pleasure because, Jenny, you were on the stage and the screen for about four decades, and you're sort of part of the national consciousness, really, for some of your films like Women in Love. I mean, so many people know you, and they're very excited because you're going to be talking about your life, I know, a week on Sunday in Bembridge. And
yes.
Some tickets are still available. We'll tell people about that at the end. But we thought today it would be lovely just to sort of run through some of the amazing films and the amazing theatrical work that you've done. And I just wanted to start by asking you, Jenny, about the beginning of your career, because obviously you did have to go to stage school, and it was very different in those days.
Yes, and Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage. My parents certainly didn't want me to go on the stage, you know, but my granny did, and
yes.
My granny was married to a professional fiddle player, and so she was quite keen on all that.
Yeah.
And she took me to a Punch and Judy show on the South Coast in Worthing, where I was born, and I was 4 years of age, and the lovely Punch and Judy man, he asked if any little girl and boy would like to stand up and do a little song or dance while I was there, straight in front of everybody, and making up some little dance to his keyboard music.
Yeah.
And the second taste of it was when I was seven, and I ran up on a talent show to sing "Put Another Nickel in the Old Nickodium. All I want is loving you and music, music, music."
And
there I stopped. I stopped because I couldn't remember anymore. My mother was not very pleased with me.
Dear. But it didn't stop you.
It didn't stop me.
Central School of Speech and Drama.
I went to Central School. Now it's the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama, as Royal Academy of Drama, RADA, is.
But you went on the wrong course, didn't you?
Well, the wrong course for me, not regarding my parents' wishes, of course. I went on the teacher's course, and that was 3 years of studying. There was more studying than action on the stage. But I got my degree to teach English, and from the moment I left, I went straight into repertory as an ASM, that's assistant stage manager, at Wolverhampton Grand Theatre.
Wow. Now, repertory is something actors don't do these days. Do you think it's important?
Repertory is sadly missing for young actors, because the only experience that they get really is television, playing odd parts on television. They don't actually learn different techniques that we learnt at drama school, which, you know, when I was at drama school, we were learning drama at the Albert Hall, and we had to stand at the very top of the Albert Hall and call down what we were saying, so the staff, the voice teachers at the bottom, could actually hear what you're saying.
Wow.
But the thing is, that's not the end of the story. We worked with things called bone props.
Right.
And they were little pieces of bone about the width of your index finger and your middle finger together.
Yeah.
And you place it between your top teeth and your bottom teeth, and you say, "The quality of Murphy is not thinned." And you can hardly do it. You bite your fingers off doing it.
Yeah.
But this is how we learnt. We learnt to project. We learnt to sound the consonants and the vowels. And, of course, every accent that appeared at Central School, every dialect and accent, was ironed out.
Yes.
And so we all spoke BBC.
Yes.
That's until the Royal Court took over and they introduced to us Alan Bates and Albert Finney and those North Country wonderful actors. And then it broke the spell.
Well, that's interesting, because I've got some clips of your voice, and it does change a lot over the decades. You can actually hear, you know, how it has changed. So, first of all, can I just get us on to your big break? Which was in film.
Yes.
It was a Hammer horror film called Nightmare.
Yes.
And I've got a clip from that. I wondered if you wouldn't mind us listening to that now.
Not at all.
Well, that was all pretty dramatic, wasn't it?
Yes, that said a lot, really, didn't it?
And how did you audition for that part?
Well, that's a good question, James, a good question. I was down in the Connaught Theatre in Worthing, and I was playing in a show called Under the Yum Yum Tree,
right,
which was supposed to go into London.
Yeah.
And I was asked to go to the Bray Studios to audition for this role in this film, Nightmare.
Yeah.
And got there at 10 in the morning, waited all day, and I was the last to be seen. And I was very nervous because I had to get back to Sussex. I was in Windsor. I had to get back to Sussex, and the weather was shocking. It was terrible. It was foggy, and the trains were slowing down, as we know they do.
Yeah.
So by the time it came to my turn to be auditioned, they asked me, guess what, just to scream. And of course I was at screaming point, so I did that very easily. No problems.
It was exactly
there.
That scream. Fantastic.
And got back, but the journey back was just the end, because in those days we didn't have mobile phones.
Oh, I know.
So I was on the train going down to Sussex from Victoria, down to Brighton from Victoria.
Yeah.
And I knew I was going to be late. This is a sin that you never commit in the theatre.
No.
You're never late. You're exactly. never late. This producer of the play at the Connaught had to stand on the stage. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be playing you music until the leading lady decides to arrive. She's caught in the fog.
Oh, dear.
Well, it is an impossible situation.
I bet.
I was, you know, rightly told off. But it was worth it because I got the film.
Well, that's brilliant. Now, here's something to clear the fog. It's Windmills of Your Mind. It's, I think, one of your favourite tracks by Nell Harrison. Noel Harrison and Windmills of Your Mind, favourite track from the wonderful screen and stage star Jenny Lindon we have with us in the studio today. Jenny, I'd like to turn next to an amazing film. It's Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Yes.
And this was the first ever feature film with Doctor Who in it. And it wasn't played by the BBC Doctor Who of the time. It was played by Peter Cushing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Now, he's just been resurrected digitally for the last Star Wars film, hasn't he?
I gather this. Yes, I'm longing to see that film.
Well, what was he like? Was he frightening? Like he appeared in the Hammer
opposite,
Horrors?
The opposite.
Yeah.
He was such a gentleman. He was a great friend of ours, and his wife also, Helen, with Chris and I. And I got to know him pretty well because we did the film, and then we did a play in London together called Thark.
That's right.
By Ben Travers, which was a farce. And so we did have lovely times with Peter. And unfortunately, in 1971, Helen died, and Peter almost died with her, really.
Oh, dear.
He couldn't cope with it. But what a lovely man. And amusingly, he always wore white gloves because he smoked.
Right.
And he never wanted any nicotine on his fingers for filming. So he was always in his white gloves.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Just at a tangent, another story is, cigars have a band on them. That band is apparently for the white gloves, so the white gloves don't get dirty on the cigar. So there we go. Anyway.
Interesting little tidbit.
Back to you.
Yes.
You were also starring with Roy Castle. I mean, he was an amazing chap, wasn't
another.
He?
What a wonderful cast I was with.
I know.
Because Roy was so entertaining, and he never wasted a minute in his dressing room. He was tap dancing, playing the trumpet, fooling about, and he did all those jokes on the set, which made us laugh a lot. And Gordon Fleming, the director, wasn't too pleased with us, you know, because we used to get very giggly.
Yeah.
We had a lot of corridors to run down on this set, and a lot of swinging doors.
Yes.
And the petrified jungle and the thals, and there was so much action. The set was totally brilliant. It was all papier-mâché.
I'm afraid it looks papier-mâché, actually.
Yes, but at the time, James, it was so exciting. You walked onto the set, it was like another planet, which it was meant to be, but it was just gorgeous and very clever, and all plastic.
Well, let me explain this next clip, because mm-hmm. a very short clip in which you, Doctor Who, and Roy Castle, and Roberta Tovey,
yes.
you're all trapped in a room, but you're being given room service by the Daleks. Well, by one Dalek in particular. Yes. And the room service does look appalling. It looks like a little pot of guacamole, a little pot of tiramisu, a little pot of bean dip. And what you do, very, very cleverly, I have to say, because the Dalek tells you this has got to last you for another day, you immediately take the bean dip and you stick it over the Dalek's antennae. So let's listen to that.
He's coming.
Take this. It must last you till tomorrow.
It must be very, very satisfying to take out a Dalek. But you've still done a lot of Doctor Who conventions, haven't you, since then?
Yes, a lot of symposiums and conventions all over England. I haven't yet been to America with them. I doubt if I would go now, but I've certainly done them in Manchester and Coventry and Birmingham, and they're absolutely crowded out. They do a lot of the shows, the Star Wars and stuff
Fabulous.
Like that there, and it's just a mass of people, and the fans dress up in costumes of their favourite series.
Yeah.
So a lot of people wondering about. I've always thought that if there were aliens visiting this country, they could come and appear at those symposiums and no one would ever know.
Well, perhaps you've met some.
Yes, probably I'd have and not known.
In a minute, I want to turn to some of the amazing classic series of the 1960s and the 1970s, like The Avengers and The Persuaders. Yes. But first, we've got to get some adverts in. Before then, the theme music from The Avengers, this will take people back.
Across the Isle of Wight and across the world, this is Vectis Radio.
It's the afternoon show here on Vectis Radio, and it's James here with film and stage star Jenny Linden. And Jenny, you got some of the best tunes in the 1960s for the shows that you were in. That was John Barry's tune for The Persuaders. I think that was actually 1970, that one. But you were in The Avengers, you were in The Champions. There's complete iconic shows of my youth. And wonderful music, amazing people you were starring with, Patrick McNee
yes.
and Roger Moore.
Yes.
Was Roger Moore really as suave as he looks?
Oh, absolutely. And he was a divine. He's beautiful. He was at his complete peak during the Persuaders, which was originally called the Friendly Persuaders.
Yeah.
But I think they decided that Curtis and Moore, they don't want to anticipate anything. They might not be so friendly within the series.
Right.
You know, as part of the act, as part of the drama.
Yeah.
So they cut the friendly. They called it The Persuaders instead. The first one was shot in the south of France, in which I was in.
Yes.
And so I arrived in the south of France completely sheet white, as you do, the beginning of June. Roger had been there for 6 months, and he was wonderful, you know, totally brown, beautiful blue eyes.
Yeah.
Sorry?
A point.
Oh,
exactly.
Absolutely. And such fun. He was such fun because he didn't believe his own publicity. He never believed that he was a great actor. He was a joke all the time. But what he was so clever at was being himself.
Yes.
And you know, most actors, most of us, we don't like being ourselves in any role that we play.
No.
We like the fact that it's another character.
I think everyone can sort of see, though, a little bit with Roger Moore, that he's always himself.
Yes.
Do you think?
And it's
yeah.
hard.
It's a trademark, yeah.
He was a policeman's son and a Cockney, and
he
speaks mid-Atlantic beautifully.
Yes. Now, were he and Tony Curtis always sort of trying to sort of do each other down or sort of squabbling with each other, like they did as characters?
Sorry, yes, I think people held their breath. They met in the south of France. Tony came over from America
right.
when I was there. So I think people were holding their breath. Are they going to get on?
Yeah.
Is this going to be okay? They soon became quite naughty, really.
Oh, really?
There were a couple of naughties, and they did get on, and their magic shows on the screen. I think
yeah, because on screen they're always squabbling with each other. Here's a clip, actually, with you and them. You're meant to be at a bullfight, but I don't believe you were at a bullfight. I think you were actually in the studio, you told me. But
absolutely.
Somebody's going to get themselves killed.
I've got a nomination.
Why do they do it?
Show their masculinity and their courage to prove their virility.
You've got to be stupid.
Right, I've got another nomination for you. You know something? He would be one of the greatest bullfighters of our time. He could go down in the ring and without a sword, he would talk him to death.
Well, the funny thing is, after that, there's another clip where they're both vying for your attention on the back of a speedboat, trying to sort of rub suntan oil into you.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do. We often went out on that speedboat for fun.
Gosh.
Between shooting, because
it must have been
they
so
loved,
glamorous.
They loved going out together and taking everybody with them. Roger liked to be surrounded by anything feminine, female, and so did Tony, really.
Yeah.
They were very naughty and very sweet and very lovely, and I worked with Roger on The Saint twice, and one of which he directed. So I did sort of know Rog, and I was very happy to be part of his team.
Brilliant.
In those productions.
Well, in a moment, I'm going to move on to what you're really famous for. It's Women in Love. You were sort of one of the four protagonists in Women in Love. But first, one of your favourite songs, which is a love song, which is from West Side Story. And this is from the film of West Side Story, with Jim Bryant singing Maria. Ah.
The most beautiful sound I ever heard. Maria, 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 Maria.
That was Jim Bryant and Maria from West Side Story, written, of course, by Leonard Bernstein. And it is just... Oh, he's going on. I'm going to stop him now because... It's beautiful.
Yes, stunning.
Isn't it? Absolutely
stunning.
Beautiful.
Beautiful,
it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck, doesn't it?
Yes.
Beautiful one. Now, Jenny, we have got to talk about Women in Love, because this is a defining role for you. It's Ken Russell's film of D.H. Lawrence's novel.
Yes.
And it came out, I think, in 1969, was it?
Yes, it was.
And it was a controversial film at the time, because there was a lot of nudity, particularly amongst the leading men, because there was this naked wrestle in front of the fire between Oliver Reed and Alan Bates.
Uh-huh.
And it's you and Glenda Jackson in there, and you're in the 20s or the 30s, but you're defying all conventions of the time, aren't you?
Yes. Shirley Russell did the costumes for this film, and they're stunning to wear.
Oh, they are,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't know that I was going to do this film at all, because I tested for The Lion in Winter, starring Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn. And after I'd done this test, in which I cried, Peter's such a wonderful actor, it's enough to make you cry on anything you do, really. He said, see you on the set, kid. And I thought, hello, I've got this film, Lion in Winter.
Yeah.
But Katharine Hepburn decided, she said, there's only one person who cries in this movie, and that's me.
Oh, dear.
And I lost it because of that. Lost it, couldn't believe it, and decided I have a baby now.
Yeah. And
which I did.
I know, and your son Rupert, I think, was very, very young when you were auditioning for Women in Love.
3 months, yes.
Yeah.
3 months old when I got Women. So this test was shown to Ken Russell, because he was testing people left, right and centre. I think a lot of people were tested.
Yeah.
And this test was shown to him. My agent got it in his way somehow. And so Ken was very keen that I should do it. Now, nobody believes me, but I was not keen, because I actually wanted to be with my first baby, my only son, as it turns out. But I wanted to be with him for at least 9 months.
Yeah.
And so I was determined not to do it. Much to the chagrin of my agent and other people who wanted me to do it, other people in the business. So anyway, Ken actually arrived on the doorstep of my mother-in-law's and father-in-law's house in Berkshire. and introduced himself to both those people and my husband, Chris, and came in and said, we want to speak to Jenny. And my mother-in-law, adorable lady, she said, do come in. Perhaps you'd like a drink, and perhaps I could give you some dinner. And they stayed.
Oh,
and they
nice.
Talked. We talked, well, I suppose until about 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd got away with it because I told them quite flatly that I didn't want to do the film because I'd got this baby and I'd dyed my hair black.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to be in this film. And they were about to leave at about 10:30 at night. And Ken said, good night, Jenny. Your costume fitting is with my wife, Shirley, at 10:30 this Monday morning. See you there.
Wow.
And that was that. I did the film, obviously, and it was the right thing to do. And what a film. What a chance.
No, I know. It's fantastic. And you were amazing in that. We're going to hear a clip from that in just a second.
Thank you.
But Ken Russell, he was testing you, but was he a very testing man?
Yes, he was very exacting. He was ambiguous, actually. He was very quite difficult to understand. And when you thought you'd got what he wanted you to do, he would then contradict it and you had to do something else. So it was tiring because you couldn't read him very easily.
Yeah.
He was dominant and quite demanding. He quite liked, bless him, he's not here now, but he did wonderful work, but he quite liked to have whipping boys and girls.
Yeah.
And he certainly used me at one stage as a whipping girl, but surprisingly Alan Bates as well as a whipping boy, which was very sad because Alan, of course, is a beautiful actor and done a great deal of work. So Ken was a mixture for us, but his result in the film, the colour, the rhythm, you know, how it was dressed.
It is so beautifully shot.
Yes.
And also at the end, that alpine scene.
Yes.
It's so beautiful, but I understand he was putting your life in danger all the way through
yes.
that.
Yes, there was a huge sled run right the way down a very high mountain, and I was to get on the back of the sledge that Alan was in the front of, and I looked at that journey. It was sheer, absolutely straight down, you know, from A to Z. And I asked an Austrian guide who said, you know, if you do that run, my dear, you will not be in the rest of the movie. So I went to Ken and reported it, and Ken just said, oh, yes, yes. And somebody else did it. Actually, an Austrian girl did it.
Oh, gosh.
Who knew how to do it. But Ken's like that. He doesn't really think much about what might happen.
Well, we're going to hear plenty more about this a week on Sunday, just so that people at home know about this. Judith and I are going to be chatting with Jenny Lyndon as part of our Ramshackle Cinema experience. It's going to be at the Spinnaker in Bembridge, and that's on January the 22nd. It's a Sunday at 3 o'clock. If you'd like to get tickets, they're only £5 each, but we're running out very, very quickly. I think we're going to put another date on as well, so do get in touch with us. All you need to do is call 875738. That's 875738. Or you can email Judith, which is Jira, J-I-R-A at btinternet.com. That's J-I-R-A at btinternet.com. Or have a look at our website, which is www.ramshacklecinema.co.uk. Next up, we're going to hear Jenny and Alan Bates in Women in Love, and then we'll be back after the adverts.
I'm not taken in by your word twisting. If you still feel you belong to Hermione, then you do, that's all. You don't belong to me.
If you weren't such a fool, you'd know that one could be decent even when one is wrong. It was wrong of me to go on all that time with her. It was a deathly process. But after all, one can have a little human decency. But no, you must tear my soul out with your jealousy at the very mention of her name.
I? Jealous? She means nothing to me. Not that. It's what she stands for that I hate. Her lies and her falseness. It's death. But you want it, don't you? You can't help yourself. Well, then, you go and get it. That's what I say. But don't come to me. I've got nothing to do with it.
That is such an amazing track. That is Barbara Streisand singing Memory from Cats.
Yes.
And I think Jenny... There was something very special about Cats, isn't there? Because I understand that you were there long before Cats went on the stage with Andrew Lloyd Webber. sort of testing out his songs. Is that right?
Yes, it's absolutely right. I was doing my own show, Sounds Entertaining.
Yeah.
And I was doing it in Reading. And I in my own show, we were interested in putting words and music together because I was doing it with a pianist. And so we put words and music together. I used to put poetry with music.
Yes.
And this sort of thing. And at the end of the show, Andrew came round. He said, my goodness, you're doing what I wanted to do for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You're putting words and music together of your own choice. He said, I've always wanted to do T.S. Eliot's The Cats.
Yes.
Would you agree to meet me and go through The Cats and speak the Cats poetry, as it were,
yeah,
so that I can compose the music, and then we'll put this on at Sidmonton, where he lived,
yeah,
in our theatre there, as a show in,
yeah,
the summer.
Wow.
Well, would I agree? Of course I'd agree. And so we did that for the next few months. So I was there as he composed the music,
wow,
literally in front of me.
Wow.
This is a clever, clever man, a beautiful musician,
yeah,
one of our greatest ever. And he was just one tune after another poured out of him.
Yes.
And I was just to read the poetry to the music. It was very exacting.
Yeah.
He wasn't easy,
yeah,
by a long way, but it was very rewarding. Then we did the show at Sidmonton.
Yeah.
And I also put a lot of this work into my one-woman show,
yeah,
so that I could do it with the pianist as he had done it.
Fantastic.
But then he turned it the next year. He'd got singers to sing it, as the rest is history. We,
yeah,
all know the story of the wonderful Cats.
How amazing that you were there at the beginning. Now, I am going to surprise,
yes,
you now, because I have got a little clip of you singing. And this is you singing with Harry Secombe.
Ah, yes.
Love is a vehicle that gains velocity in direct ratio to its reciprocity. Thus, where there's no reciprocation, it follows that there's no acceleration.
I'm afraid I do not understand your metaphor. Who are you composing such a grandiose letter for? Love requires no further complication, so why not try a different?
How about that? That was from Peeps,
yes,
in the 1980s, and you're singing. There was a stage play called Peeps and So to Bed, because,
yes,
Peeps always wrote And So to Bed.
It was a television.
And it was
a television film.
That's right, of the,
yes,
stage play.
Of the stage play.
And you, yes, of course, have a French accent there.
The French wife I was playing,
exactly,
his French wife, with dear, dear Harry, who I loved very keenly. He's wonderful, lovely. What a privilege to sing with Harry. And he was very good as Peeps.
I know.
Gorgeous.
Well, we'll be able to see more of those clips when we go live with you on Sunday, the 22nd of January.
Yes,
we're
good.
Really looking forward to that. There's so many more stories. There are lots more things I wanted to get in today. There was about, yes, Casualty, there was about Chancer,
yes,
there was about your worldwide tour with the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Absolutely.
But we're going to have to leave those.
Oh.
And we're going to have to leave that story of why Rudolf Nureyev made the tea lady blush, and it's a terrible story, so you're going to have to just come along to Bembridge a week on Sunday and come and listen to all of those wonderful things that Jenny has experienced. Thank you very much for being in the studio, Jenny. Again,
if you
want to get tickets, do email info@ramshacklecinema.co.uk or call 875738. There are only a few left, but we're going to put another date on, I'm sure, because Jenny is full of these amazing stories. We're going to finish now, Jenny, by listening to one of your favourite songs, and one that you sang yourself, I think, and it's Send in the Clowns.
I did, in my own show, Send in the Clowns, and I used to love singing it too.
And this is a friend of yours singing it, Cleo Lane,
who lived quite close to us in Hertfordshire, and I used to do a lot of work with Cleo. She used to sing, and I used to read the poetry. Sometimes I would sing, but very occasionally, because she's a great singer.
Fantastic. Well, here it is, and thanks very much, Jenny, for coming in today, and also brilliant to have your husband Chris here.
Yes.
He's been a huge support, I know, to you over the years, and
he's
here in the studio with us now. So we'll see you very soon.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the
the clown.
www.vectisradio.com.